chapter 12, 2 Kings chapters 14 through 20, the fall of the northern kingdom. 12-1, introduction. The story is told of two young men in a canoe sailing down the river to Niagara Falls. Although the water was placid and calm, they were approaching the area where the water began to pick up speed as it headed for the falls. A man on the shore, sensing the danger, called out, "Young men, ahoy! The rapids are below you!" But the young men, who heard the warning, did not heed the call. Instead, they went on laughing and joking, paying no attention to the danger. On the shore, the man watching began to run and shouted in desperation, "Ahoy! The rapids are below you!" Still, the young men did not heed his warning. Faster and faster ran the current until the young men were entrapped in the rapids and began to fear. With all the power at their command, they tried to turn the canoe, but it was too late. Over the falls they went, all because they refused to heed the warning voice.
David O. McKay, Gospel Ideals, page 512.
Ancient Israel could be compared to these two young men. Repeated warnings from the prophets were ignored. The withholding of blessings failed to check Israel in their mad rush to destruction. In the year 721 BC, the northern kingdom fell before the vigorous attack of the Assyrian enemy, and its people were taken to a foreign land as captives. Later, some escaped and went into the north countries. They are often referred to as the Lost Ten Tribes. Refer to Enrichment D. This chapter will deal with the history of this tragic fall. In previous chapters, it has been shown that the Lord again and again gave clear warning through the prophets, who worked feverishly to bring Israel to her senses. Isaiah, Micah, Joel, Amos, Hosea, and probably many others called again and again to a rebellious Israel. These chapters of the Old Testament answer this question. Could God have done more to bring this recalcitrant people back to Him? Instructions to students. 1. Use notes and commentary below to help you as you read and study 2 Kings chapters 14 through 20. 2. Complete points to ponder as directed by your teacher. Individual study students should complete all of this section. Notes and commentary on 2 Kings chapters 14 through 20. 12-2, 2 Kings, chapters 14 through 20. The period encompassed by this section of study is roughly 800 BC to 721 BC, a period of 80 years. Refer to Enrichment A, where a chronology of the kings is given. 12-3, 2 Kings, chapter 14, verses 3 through 11. Was Amaziah a righteous king? 2 Chronicles chapter 25 verse 2 comments that Amaziah's heart was not perfect in what he did. This is a way of saying he was double-minded, an attitude that makes bad the good things that are done. His instability is shown in 1. His failure to eliminate the high places used for worship of false gods. 2. His desire to make war with the help of enemies. And 3, his failure to heed Joash's warning. 12-4, 2 Kings chapter 14, verse 7. Why did Amaziah attack Edom? The kingdom of Judah had controlled Edom and exacted tribute from the kingdom since the days of King David. In the days of King Joram, however, Edom revolted. Refer to 2 Kings chapter 8, verse 20. Amaziah raised a large army and again made Edom subordinate to Judah. 12-5, 2 Kings chapter 14, verses 8 through 14. Why did Amaziah want to look King Joash in the face? To look one another in the face is a Hebrew idiom for going to war with one another. Although in the version here, no explanation is given for why Amaziah asked for war. The parallel version in Chronicles explains what occurred. Refer to 2 Chronicles chapter 25, verses 1 through 13. As he was strengthening his army for the war with the Edomites, Amaziah hired 100,000 mercenaries from the northern kingdom of Israel, or Ephraim. A prophet warned him that since Israel was in such disfavor with God, to add these mercenaries to Judah's army would cause Judah to lose the battle. Amaziah sent the men back, and they were greatly angered by the act. While Amaziah went south to battle the Edomites, the mercenaries vented their anger by ravaging several of Judah's towns on the return to the north. When Amaziah learned of their actions, he declared war on Israel. Joash's answer was a contemptuous insult. In his parable, Amaziah and Judah are the thistle, a weed that dries up and blows away in the summer heat. Joash and Israel are the cedar, and allusion to the cedars of Lebanon, giant and majestic trees that grew to over 100 feet in height. Amaziah evidently asked for a royal princess as part of an official state apology. Joash said he would be like a wild beast instead and tromp the thistle weed down. Amaziah took the challenge and was badly beaten. The Chronicle's account explains that the loss came because Amaziah had brought back the gods of Edom with him after the victory there, and he had worshipped them. Refer to 2 Chronicles chapter 25, verses 14 through 16 and verse 20. 12-6, 2 Kings chapter 14, verse 22. Elath. Elath was also known as Ezion-Geber. It was an area that had been controlled by Solomon and used as a home port for his Red Sea trading fleet to Ophir and Arabia. Refer to 1 Kings chapter 9, verse 26, and 2 Chronicles chapter 8, verse 17. 12-7. 2 Kings chapter 15, verses 1 and 13. Who were Azariah and Uzziah? They were the same person. It is not clear why the text here uses the two different names. 12-8, 2 Kings chapter 15, verse 5. Why did the Lord smite Uzziah, and what is a several house? A favorite passage of missionaries and teachers is 2 Chronicles chapter 26, verses 16 through 21. They use it to show that it is necessary to have divine authority to act in the ordinances and offices of the church. Uzziah was smitten because he took it upon himself to perform rites reserved only for the priesthood. Uzziah was a fairly good king and, as such, prospered and became strong. But at that point, he became lifted up and usurped priesthood authority with disastrous results. A several house gets its name from the word sever. The several house in which Uzziah lived was one severed or separated from society to house lepers, who were separated from society because of their disease. 12-9, 2 Kings chapter 15, verse 11, The Chronicles of the Kings of Israel. This record is not what is now called the Books of Chronicles in the present Old Testament. They are the chronicles or record of the kings of Judah. The record of the kings of Israel was lost and is not available today. 12-10, 2 Kings chapter 15, verse 19. Who was Pul? Pul is the personal name of King Tiglath-Pileser III of Assyria. The kings of Israel paid tribute to him in return for protection against Egypt and other powers. He invaded Israel in 733 B.C., and captured some towns later taken over by his successor, Shalmaneser V. 12-11, 2 Kings chapter 15, verse 25. Who were the Gileadites? The Gileadites were mainly of the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh. Refer to Numbers chapter 26, verses 29 through 30, chapter 27, verse 1, chapter 36, verse 1. Joshua chapter 17, verses 1 and 3, and 1 Chronicles chapter 2, verses 21 and 23, chapter 7, verses 14 through 17. 12-12, 2 Kings chapter 16, verse 3. Did Ahaz sacrifice a son to Molech? This verse leaves some doubt about what Ahaz did. Did he kill his son or merely initiate him into the worship of a false god? Second Chronicles chapter 28, verse 3 supports the idea of an actual human sacrifice, and the commentators generally agree that Ahaz did murder some of his children in this fashion. So far as the fact is concerned, we have here the first instance of an actual Molech sacrifice among the Israelites, as in one performed by slaying and burning. The offering of his son for Molech took place, in all probability, during the severe oppression of Ahaz by the Syrians, and was intended to appease the wrath of the gods, as was done by the king of the Moabites in similar circumstances. 2 Kings chapter 3, verse 27.
See of Kiel and F. Delish. Commentary on the Old Testament, Volume 3, Chapter 1, pages 399 through 400.
12-13, 2 Kings chapter 16, verse 11. Made it against King Ahaz came from Damascus. This phrase means that Urijah had the altar made by the time King Ahaz got back. Evidently, while in Damascus, Ahaz saw an altar, probably to a false god, that caught his admiration. He had a duplicate made in Jerusalem and set aside the great altar in the temple to use the new one in its place. Compare with 2 Chronicles chapter 28, verses 23 through 25. 12-14, 2 Kings chapter 16, verse 18. What is a covert for the Sabbath? The covert for the Sabbath may have been a shelter or an awning where the royal family sat to hear the law of the Sabbath. Some suppose it was a covered passageway to the temple from the royal house.
See Adam Clark, The Holy Bible with a Commentary and Critical Notes, Volume 2, page 534. Samuel Fallows, The Popular and Critical Bible Encyclopedia and Scriptural Dictionary, Covert for the Sabbath.
12-15, 2 Kings chapter 17, verse 6. Destruction of Samaria. Samaria was destroyed in the first or second year of the reign of Sargon, who took his official name from a king of about 2,200 years before, whom he claimed as an ancestor. He finished the capture of Samaria his predecessors had started. The date is thought to be 721 B.C., but it may have been 722. The destruction of Samaria, the capital of the northern kingdom, was foretold by Hosea and Micah. Refer to Hosea chapter 13, verse 16, and Micah chapter 1, verse 6, and is treated in more detail in Enrichment D. 12-16, 2 Kings chapter 17, verse 9. What does the expression, from the tower of the watchman to the fenced city, mean? Towers were built by owners of vineyards. Refer to 2 Chronicles chapter 26, verse 10, so they could observe the countryside and protect their possessions. The expression, from the tower of the watchman to the fenced city, simply means from thinly populated areas to heavily populated areas. It is another way of saying that all Israel, the northern kingdom, had turned to the worship of idols. 12-17, 2 Kings chapter 17, verse 16. What is meant by the worship of the host of heaven? This is the first time this form of idolatry is mentioned in the northern kingdom. To worship the host of heaven was to worship the sun, moon, and stars, something that Moses had forbidden the people to do. Refer to Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 19, and chapter 17, verse 3. 12-18, 2 Kings chapter 17, verse 18. What tribes were carried away, and what tribes were left? The statement that there was none left but the tribe of Judah only can be understood correctly only if one realizes that at this time Benjamin, Levi, and all other Israelites who had left the nation of Israel and joined Judah were included under the title of Judah. The 10 tribes carried into captivity at this time were Reuben, Simeon, Issachar, Zebulun, Gad, Dan, Asher, Naphtali, Ephraim, and Manasseh. The three remaining tribes were Judah, Benjamin, and Levi. Some of the tribe of Levi were still with Israel, the 10 tribes, however, and some of Ephraim, Manasseh, and other tribes were with Judah. So the division is not as clear as a superficial reading might indicate. 12-19, 2 Kings chapter 17, verses 24 through 41. The beginnings of the Samaritans. Sometime after the 10 tribes of Israel were taken into captivity, Assyria moved some of its own people into the area formerly occupied by the Israelites. When the new residents failed to prosper, the king of Assyria sent an Israelite priest to the area to instruct the people in the worship of Jehovah, though it was liberally mixed with the paganism of Assyria, verses 28 and 29. Living as they did in Samaria and its environs, these new occupants of the land became known as Samaritans. Eventually, intermarriage of the Assyrian settlers with those stragglers who had survived the captivity, not all Israelites were removed, caused the Samaritans to claim Israelite covenant blessings. The Jews of later years refused to accept this claim because of the Samaritans' Gentile blood and pagan religious tendencies. This refusal led to the increasing hostility between the Jews and the Samaritans that was evident in the time of Jesus. Refer to notes and commentary on Ezra chapters 4 and 5. The Jews simply refused to associate with their Samaritan neighbors. Refer to John chapter 4, verse 9. 12-20, 2 Kings chapter 18, verse 4. Why did Hezekiah destroy the brazen serpent? During their 40-year journey in the desert, the ancient Israelites often murmured against God and his prophet, Moses. The Lord sent among the people fiery serpents that threatened great destruction as a punishment. As a means of physical salvation and as a type of the spiritual salvation to be wrought by Jesus Christ, refer to John chapter 3, verses 14 and 15, 2 Nephi chapter 25, verse 20, and Helaman chapter 8, verses 13 through 15. Moses made a serpent of brass, placed it on a pole, and taught his people that if they would gaze upon the serpent when they were bitten, physical healing would follow. Refer to Numbers chapter 21, verses 4 through 9. The brass serpent was preserved in Israel and in time became an object of adoration and was worshipped by the Israelites, much as they worshipped idols. In his zeal to eradicate all forms of idolatry in Judah, King Hezekiah had the brazen serpent destroyed along with the idols. The word Nehushtan comes from the Hebrew and means an object made of brass. The implication may be that Hezekiah was speaking contemptuously of the object being worshipped, saying it was merely a thing of brass and nothing more. 12-21, 2 Kings chapter 18, verse 13. What is known about Sennacherib, king of Assyria? The account in 2 Kings chapter 18, verse 13 through chapter 19, verse 37 is very similar to the account in Isaiah chapters 36 and 37. Sennacherib was the son of Sargon II and had numerous conquests to his credit. Clay tablets recording his various campaigns have been preserved and deciphered. The portion of one tablet that relates to the partial conquest of Judah reads as follows. As for Hezekiah the Jew, who did not submit to my yoke, 46 of his strong, walled cities, as well as the small cities in their neighborhood, which were without number, by constructing a rampart out of trampled earth, and by bringing up battering rams, by the attack of infantry, by tunnels, breaches, and the use of axes, I besieged and took those cities. 200,150 people, great and small, male and female, horses, mules, asses, camels, cattle, and sheep without number, I brought away from them and counted as spoil. Himself like a caged bird, I shut in Jerusalem his royal city. Earthworks I threw up against him, the one coming out of the city gate, I turned back to his misery. Harper's Bible Dictionary, see Sennacherib. Sennacherib's account squares very well with the accounts given in 2 Kings chapter 18, verses 13 through chapter 19, verse 37, and Isaiah chapters 36 and 37. 12-22, 2 Kings chapter 18, verse 14. How important was Lachish? Lachish was a fortified city in the land of Judah that guarded the main highway to Jerusalem from the south. By destroying Lachish, the Assyrians would deprive Judah of any support from Egypt, as well as depriving them of one of their strongest fortifications. Refer to 2 Chronicles chapter 32, verse 9. 12-23, 2 Kings chapter 18, verse 17. Who were Tartan, Rabsaris, and Rabshakeh? The King James Version of the Bible treats these as personal names, but scholars now think that they were the titles of Assyrian officials appointed by Sennacherib to conclude terms for the surrender of Jerusalem.
The Interpreter's Dictionary, The Bible, Volume 3, page 293.
12-24, 2 Kings, chapter 18, verse 17. What were the conduit of the upper pool and the highway of the fuller's field? A fuller was one who cleaned, pressed, bleached, and dyed cloth for a living. Since this work required a great deal of water, the fuller's field, or place of work, was always near a pool or spring of water. The spring of Gihon was a natural water source in the Kidron Valley. In early times, before Israelite occupation, the inhabitants of Jerusalem sent their women to the spring for water. Standing on an elevated platform, the women let their leather buckets down a 40-foot shaft or conduit that led to the spring below and hauled up their water. Some think this was the conduit of the upper pool. Located nearby was the Fuller's Field. Refer to Miller and Miller, Harper's Bible Dictionary, see Gihon. Remains of a large man-made pool west of the city have been found, however, and some scholars think that may have been the location. 12-25, 2 Kings chapter 18, verse 26. Why did the Jewish leaders want to speak in the Syrian language? The Jews were under siege with a large population shut up in Jerusalem. The Jewish leaders did not want their people to hear the Assyrian conditions for fear that the people would panic and give in to their demands. Rabshakeh ignored their request and only cried louder. Refer to 2 Kings chapter 18, verse 28. 12-26, 2 Kings chapter 18, verse 34. To what do the words Hamath, Arpad, Seraphim, Henna, and Iva refer? These are the names of various cities conquered by Sennacherib during his numerous military campaigns. Many cities in ancient times had their own idols upon whom they relied in times of stress.
See Interpreter's Dictionary, The Bible, Volume 3, page 296.
Rabshakeh contemptuously dismissed the main consolation of the Jews, the idea that their God, Jehovah, would save them, by noting how unsuccessful other gods had been in defending their cities. 12-27, 2 Kings chapter 19, verse 3. What does the expression, "For the children are come to the birth, and there is not strength to bring forth," mean? A figure denoting extreme danger, the most desperate circumstances. If the woman in travail has not strength to bring forth the child which has come to the mouth of the womb, both the life of the child and that of the mother are exposed to the greatest danger. And this was the condition of the people here. Refer to the similar figure in Hosea chapter 13, verse 13.
Keel and DeLeach Commentary, Volume 1, Chapter 3, page 442.
12-28, 2 Kings chapter 19. Hezekiah prayed for deliverance, and Isaiah brought the Lord's answer. In these verses and the parallel account in Isaiah chapter 37 is found one of the most remarkable stories in scriptural history. The Assyrian army, with all its might and power, encircled Jerusalem. The northern kingdom had already fallen. All of Judah except Jerusalem itself was in Assyrian hands. There was no cause to hope that they could successfully resist. No cause but one. Hezekiah had been a righteous king. Refer to 2 Kings chapter 18, verses 4 through 6. And now he trusted in God again. In deep and pleading prayer, he asked him for the solution. The Lord answered through his servant Isaiah, although the answer must have tested the faith of Hezekiah. While Assyrian campfires could be seen on all sides, Isaiah promised that not even an arrow would be shot against Jerusalem, for the Lord himself would defend the city. Refer to 2 Kings chapter 19, verses 32 through 34. That very night, Isaiah's promise was fulfilled. Some mysterious plague struck the Assyrian camp, and in the morning, 185,000 Assyrians lay dead. Assyria's remnant left the scene like a dog with its tail tucked between its legs. Refer to verses 35 and 36. Judah could say, as did Elisha, "They that be with us are more than they that be with them." 2 Kings chapter 6, verse 16.
12-29. 2 Kings chapter 19, verse 15.
Does God dwell between the cherubims? This imagery is taken from the Ark of the Covenant. Refer to Exodus chapter 25, verse 22.
12-30. 2 Kings chapter 19, verses 22 through 28.
The Lord addressed Assyria through Isaiah. Though Assyria had taken credit for all she had done, the Lord set the record straight. Assyria was but a tool in his hands. Since she was only a tool, he still controlled her, and she was at his mercy.
12-31. 2 Kings chapter 19, verse 35.
The Joseph Smith translation corrects this verse to read that they who were left arose to find that those smitten had died.
12-32. 2 Kings chapter 20, verses 5 and 6. Is there a time appointed to die?
President Spencer W. Kimball explained, "Just as Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 2 says, 'I am confident that there is a time to die,' but I believe also that many people die before their time because they are careless, abuse their bodies, take unnecessary chances, or expose themselves to hazards, accidents, and sickness." Of the antediluvians, we read, "Hast thou marked the old way which wicked men have trodden? Which were cut down out of time, whose foundation was overflown with a flood?" Job chapter 22, verses 15 and 16. In Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 17, we find this statement, "Be not overmuch wicked, neither be thou foolish. Why shouldest thou die before thy time?" I believe we may die prematurely, but seldom exceed our time very much. One exception was Hezekiah, 25-year-old king of Judah, who was far more godly than his successors or predecessors. In those days was Hezekiah sick unto death, and the prophet Isaiah came to him and said unto him, "Thus saith the Lord, set thine house in order, for thou shalt die and not live." Hezekiah, loving life as we do, turned his face to the wall and wept bitterly, saying, "Remember now how I have walked before thee in truth and with a perfect heart, and have done that which is good in thy sight." The Lord yielded unto his prayers. "I have heard thy prayer. I have seen thy tears. Behold, I will heal thee. And I will add unto thy days 15 years, and I will deliver thee and this city out of the hand of the king of Assyria." 2 Kings chapter 20, verse 1, verse 3, and verses 5 and 6. A modern illustration of this exceptional extension of life took place in November 1881. My uncle David Patton Kimball left his home in Arizona on a trip across the Salt River Desert. He had fixed up his books and settled accounts, and had told his wife of a premonition that he would not return. He was lost on the desert for 2 days and 3 nights, suffering untold agonies of thirst and pain. He passed into the spirit world and described later, in a letter of January 8, 1882, to his sister, what happened there. He had seen his parents. "My father told me I could remain there if I chose to do so, but I pled with him that I might stay with my family long enough to make them comfortable, to repent of my sins and more fully prepare myself for the change. Had it not been for this, I never should have returned home, except as a corpse. Father finally told me I could remain 2 years and to do all the good I could during that time, after which he would come for me.
he mentioned four others that he would come for also. 2 years to the day from that experience on the desert, he died easily and apparently without pain. Shortly before he died, he looked up and called, "Father, Father." Within approximately a year of his death, the other four men named were also dead. Faith precedes the miracle. Refer also to Doctrine and Covenants, section 42, verse 48. 12-33, 2 Kings chapter 20, verse 11. What is the dial of Ahaz? Ahaz was the father of King Hezekiah. In his lifetime, he invented a special mechanism for telling time. The instrument appears to have consisted of a series of graduated lines or steps over which a column towered. As the earth moved, the sun would cast a shadow at a certain angle and thus measure the passing of the hours. Refer to William Smith, A Dictionary of the Bible, see Dial. Points to ponder. 12-34. A Lesson from History. There are few more dramatic contrasts in the history of the world than the one you have just studied in these chapters. Within a 20-year period, the mighty Assyrian army encircled the capitals of both Israel and Judah. In the first instance, the Assyrians went home victorious, laden with the spoils of war and herding the sorry remnants of a once proud people before them. Behind them, a nation lay smoldering in ruins. In the second instance, the same Assyrian army went home stunned and decimated. They took no booty and no captives, and left behind 185,000 of their troops lying dead on the hillsides of Jerusalem. There are many profound lessons to be learned from this. Refer to the following references and answer the questions as you ponder the lessons you could learn from this contrast. 1. Refer to Leviticus chapter 26, verses 3 through 8, and Deuteronomy chapter 28, verses 7 and 10. How were these prophecies fulfilled in Judah's case? 2. Refer to Leviticus chapter 26, verses 14, 17, and 37 through 39, and Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 20 and 25, also 33, 36, and 41. How were these prophecies fulfilled in the case of the northern kingdom of Israel? 3. As you studied these chapters, what one factor seems to you to have made the difference between Judah's and Israel's experience with Assyria? Refer to 2 Kings chapter 17, verses 6 through 18, and chapter 18, verses 1 through 7. 4. Refer to Doctrine and Covenant, section 54, verse 10, and section 88, verse 83. Also Proverbs, chapter 8, verse 17. How are these scriptures related to Hezekiah's prayers for deliverance? 5. If you were asked to give a sacrament meeting talk on what Latter-day Saints can learn from this period of Israel's history, what would you say? End of chapter 12, 2 Kings, chapters 14 through 20, The Fall of the Northern Kingdom.